Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort. And pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals. And an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the podcast, Dan Hall is back all the way from London, England, this time to talk about his family's Halloween vacation at Disneyland Paris. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me. Hello, everybody.
So we talked about our side of the ocean last time. This time we're headed to, a short skip as compared to the trip to Orlando for you.
Yeah, it's about 10% of the journey time, so it's a lot better.
And you mentioned right before we started recording that this is your first year as annual pass holders for Disneyland Paris. So talk maybe just a minute about the big picture plan, because you kind of indicated as we were talking, as we got ready here, that there was sort of this, you know, overarching plan for getting the best value out of being Disneyland Paris season pass holders.
Sure. So we bought our annual passes when we went last time in March. March, April time. Because we did a bit of research and Disneyland Paris does a few seasons really well. It does a spring piece, a little bit like Flower and Garden in Epcot.
Okay.
It does Halloween, but it does it very slightly differently, which we'll talk about in a minute, but it does it very slightly differently to the States, where it's still very much sort of your traditional Disney sort of villain focused, but it also does a bit around Harvest Festival and the autumnal piece.
Okay.
And also Christmas. So it's a weird one in Paris that the annual pass is an absolute no-brainer if you stay more than 4 days. The prices compared to the US are really different. There are three levels of annual pass, which have different levels of value. They start off at around 160 euros and go up to 225. The cheapest ones have quite a few blackout dates and get you certain discounts in certain places. We ended up going for the top one, which for, as I said, for 225 euros has no blackout dates at all. It gets you 20% off in the gift shops, 10% off in the restaurants. And one of the key things is it gets you a pretty good discount in the hotels. So when you start to book your next trip, the value really does start to kick in. Because from the US, if you log into the Disneyland Paris site, as clunky as it is,
right,
they'll tend to quote the hotels with tickets, and it comes as an all-encompassing package. They tend not to advertise rack rate on Disneyland Paris, whereas obviously on the Walt Disney World site, you can pick your hotel, you get a price, then you add your tickets and you build up your package, don't you, as you sort of go through the website.
Right. You can do it either way at Walt Disney World, but I know what you're saying. I mean, basically Disneyland Paris sort of really pushes the packages. And if I remember correctly, in order to break out elements, you have to call them.
Exactly.
From the States, at least. I mean, it might not be quite so bad from where you are, but from the States, it's a real trick because you've got them to manage the time change issue and Paris working hours, which are a little tricky because they do the long lunch and they open late. And
famously very short as well.
Yeah.
Hours in France. There is a quick tip though. If you're calling from the States, I think if you call the WDW number, they can transfer you. So you don't pick up that international rate as well.
Yes, they can transfer you. It's a little tricky to get there, but you can do it, and they'll get you there. The hard part is really just scheduling it because of the time difference and the short work hours.
Sure. I mean, so to give you an example, so we're going again in around a week's time for Christmas, and they were advertising the Disneyland Hotel. Which is the sort of premium hotel at about £1,600. And with the annual pass discount, I got it for $850. So
almost a 50% discount.
Yeah, it was a 50% discount. And you know, even the woman on the phone was surprised. And if you can hit those sort of dates that are just kind of outside the school holidays, they really do try and get your business in. So as we said, it was an absolute no-brainer. What we did say though, that it would discipline us in going to Disney, which is, you know, it's no forcing. This isn't a real first world problem, but
it does mean, I understand what you're saying, that you end up kind of having pre-made your vacation plans for the year because, you know, that's eating up your vacation time. You're unlikely to take other kinds of vacations while you've got that pass.
Exactly. And we're very lucky, you know, in what we do. So obviously we always do the sort of annual pilgrimage, or we're starting to do the annual pilgrimage west over to Florida. But, you know, Europe is on our doorstep and there are a lot of places we can go in a very, very short space of time. You know, Italy's not far. Germany's not far. Finland, all that sort of around the sort of western hub of Europe is very accessible. So we were like, okay, while the kids are young, let's just keep doing this and, you know, until we wear them out on Disney.
you can always try these other things when they're older.
Exactly. And when they start paying for it, even better. So because we live in the East End of London, so we're kind of in the right, there are three ways basically to get to Disneyland Paris from the UK. You can fly. You can get the Eurostar, which leaves from St. Pancras, from central London, which is a train ride of about 2 hours, or you can drive and get the Channel Tunnel, which is a train that holds all your cars, takes you under the English Channel, and then you carry on, you drive from there.
Right.
So we live around an hour and a half away from the Channel Tunnel, and Disneyland Paris is around 3 hours from Calais, which is the Channel Tunnel, the other side.
It's a good 4.5 hour drive part plus the trip through the channel.
Yeah. So yeah, it's about half an hour in the channel. It's not that far. So it's 208. It's something like 280 miles away from my house, Disneyland Paris, which is not doable at all. So what we tend to do is get the kids up really early while they're still sleepy, shove them in the back, get the earliest train we can. So I think we leave the house generally about 5:30 and we're in the parks by about 12.
Oh, nice.
So it's really not too bad. And plus, obviously coming, you know, your way, there's that whole jet lag thing, but obviously France is an hour in front of us. So there isn't that issue.
Right.
What I would say is the Eurostar again is incredibly expensive. It's about 200, 250, for a ticket. So when there's four of us, that's £1,000, which we would much rather put towards a hotel. And it is generally much easier that obviously we can throw our bags in the back, get in the car, and you know, five, six hours later, we're unpacked and we're starting to hit the parks.
Sure.
So another, sorry, I jumped off the AP thing. Another thing they told us when we were signing up, which seems incredible, is when we go to renew, I think our passes are up in something like May. If we renew within 4 weeks of the expiration date, they'll throw in 6 months free. So
wow.
Yeah. So
we were all excited when we got 1 month. We got a 13th.
Yeah, exactly. I was seeing that on, and on the Californian boards, they were saying, well, you know, wow, am I going to get this extra month? And I was like, well, I just checked it again, funny enough. And it's 6 months free if I renew within a month of my expiration date.
Wow. That's a deal.
I mean, it's crazy. And I'll come on to it a bit later, but it's one of the reasons why Paris is very strange as a Disney park, that they don't seem that clever about taking your money off you, which is not a phrase you tend to hear associated with a Disney entity.
Right.
It is incredibly cheap, and also for the locals, if you have a French bank account, you can pay monthly. So if you do the math, over 18 months, you're paying 225, you know, what was that, 15?
That's probably less than you're paying for your cable bill at that point.
Yeah. It's less than I spend on coffee in a week, probably, in the West End. it really is cheap. So we went for the AP, like you said. We're trying to, although on our fifth day we were starting to get value, we really are trying to see all the elements of Disney throughout the year.
Right.
So one of the key ones for us is Halloween. We're both really into Halloween, me and the saintly Mrs. Dan. We do the Halloween party for our sort of friends group every year. And Halloween over here has started to kick up a little bit again. It was big when I was younger, but sort of died away a little bit.
Interesting.
And now it's getting back. It's getting much more back into the tradition of trick or treating, dressing up. People are having parties. So we thought, you know, George was on holiday. So Arabella's still in nursery, so it doesn't really matter where George is at school now. We have to be slightly more structured in when we go. And we have over here what's called half term, which I guess is similar to your sort of winter break, spring break weeks for the kids, sort of halfway through the term, couple of weeks, week, something like that. Do you have that over there?
Different schools, you know, that's one of the interesting things, right? Summer break, everybody has a summer break of some sort. Everybody has a winter break of some sort. Yep. Just about everybody has a spring break of some sort. Fall breaks are kind of just starting to get adopted more widely.
Right.
Our school district still doesn't have any kind of official fall break, but mm-hmm. what they've done is add a couple of conference days. And they try and schedule them pretty consistently. So you get kind of a mini fall break. It's just kind of a couple of extra days.
Right.
But the only schools really taking a true fall break are those few schools around the United States that have moved to a full year-round calendar.
Yep. I think our summer breaks are a lot shorter than ours. Tend to be about 6 weeks.
Yeah, see, ours are more like 10 weeks, like about 2.5 months.
And that's probably where we make up the difference. We sort of have these weeks dotted through the terms.
Right. And that's what the year-round schools here are starting to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, that, you know, George's half term fell on Halloween weekend. So, yeah, Halloween was the Monday this year, wasn't it?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had, he was back on the Tuesday morning. So we ummed and ahed, and when we were booking it, we were like, do we really push our luck and try and see the Halloween party on Halloween on the Monday night?
Uh-huh.
But it didn't start till 5. If you think, we'd probably be there till 10, 5 hours back, we would have been home at 2.
And he'd have to be back at school.
Yeah, back at school at 8 o'clock. Yeah. And he doesn't do well with lack of sleep. He's like his mother like that. So we decided to do Thursday through Sunday. So I left really early Thursday morning, was in the parks for Thursday afternoon, left around 2-3 o'clock Sunday, and was and we're back home by sort of 8 o'clock Sunday, and just kind of had a chill day on the Monday. So yeah, so it's we decided to stay. So when we did the annual pass, the annual pass trip, which was in sort of March April time, we stayed off property, and I know we're on Skype, but I'm waggling my my fingers furiously in the air with air quotes. that off property in Disneyland Paris is not the same as off property in Florida. I was trying to think of the best comparison I could probably make is it would be off property like Animal Kingdom Lodge is to Animal Kingdom. So it's a bus ride, but it's a pretty short one. It's sort of 5-10 minutes on the bus.
And just to make sure we understand, is that one of the Disneyland Paris resort hotels or?
No.
Okay.
No.
So that's the just so off property, just outside Disney property. Yeah,
they're the partner, what they call the partner hotels.
Okay. So kind of like the Disneyland Good Neighbors that are just across the street
exactly,
kind of thing.
Exactly that. When we talk about Disneyland Paris, the straight comparison is Disneyland rather than Disney World. You know, the two parks are linked. There's more of a bubble effect in Disneyland Paris because the park is still set back enough so that you don't see, whereas in California, you know, you can pretty much look out over the ticket stile and see the Holiday Inn or whatever.
Right.
There is more of a sort of bubble. So they're partner hotels. They're galactically cheaper than the Disney hotels,
right.
As ever. But in May, it tends to rain quite a lot in France in May, and standing the trouble with the bus system is obviously in Florida, you have dedicated bus stops for particular hotels generally, you know, or a couple of hotels max.
Right.
The buses for off property in Disneyland, they serve about 5 hotels. So you can imagine the queues when it really starts to tip out, the parade's finished about 4 o'clock. And
yeah, they're running those kind of routes, maybe a little bit more, again, back to Disneyland, a little bit more like the art system, you know, the Anaheim resort transportation system.
Yeah, completely.
Okay.
So it's it was just not a great experience to finish off your day. So we said, okay, we've taken, and that's what we said. It was kind of the game plan. We'd stay in a cheap hotel, buy it, you know, spend the money on that trip for the annual passes, which worked out to about, you know, $800-900 quid for all of us. And then we'd use that to basically pay the same money but stay in a Disney hotel.
Uh-huh.
Which seemed like quite a good game plan at the time, still does. So to put everyone in the picture, and I don't know how much detail because I don't want to teach people how to suck eggs, but there are kind of five or six Disney hotels in Paris.
Right, right.
And are priced almost in relation to their proximity to the park. The Disneyland Hotel is the highest. Which is basically over the ticket gates. It's the closest hotel I've ever seen to a Disney property.
Right. And that's the one, I mean, I think we've mentioned it on the show before where you know, there's a concierge level at the Disneyland hotel that basically is the closest thing you'll get at any Disneyland anywhere in the world to, you know, staying in the park.
Yeah, exactly. Castle Club. So there's that one where you basically walk under the eaves of the hotel to walk into the park. The next three are the Hotel New York, the Newport Bay, and Sequoia Lodge. And they're all based around Lac de Disney, which is on the back of Disney Village, which is kind of a 10-minute walk away. So Newport Bay had just refurbished when we were booking for the Halloween trip, and they were doing some pretty good deals. So we went with Newport Bay.
Okay.
And they also do a club level. I know we did club level in the Floridian in Florida. This one is kind of a little bit different. It's not what you would expect from a club level in the Grand Floridian or the Poly. It has its own floor, but there's nothing particularly special about that floor. I think it's just the higher floors. I think it's 7 and 8, and it's only an eight-story hotel. It gives you your own lounge. It gives you breakfast, but breakfast in Paris is included. Generally in Disney hotels up until March, they've just taken that away, and there's, you know, everyone's completely losing.
Interesting. Yeah. That was always kind of one of those pleasant surprises that people who booked those on property, hotels would say, oh, that was kind of a cool deal. We don't usually get a free breakfast from Disney, but you do there.
And you don't anymore. So I think they stop it. If you book from something like next week and you're staying sort of post-March, you don't get your breakfast included anymore. So the club level gives you breakfast. It gives you a high tea in the lounge and, you know, the usual sort of soft drinks and coffee all day. But it's not...
Just to give people a little bit of a visual, Newport Bay Club looks... Roughly, I would say, in terms of comparing it reminds me of Beach Club.
Yeah, Beach Club. Yeah. Yeah, very New England, clapperboard sort of style. Very sort of nautically themed.
Right, a lot of ship's wheel kinds of...
There you go. Yeah, there's a ship in the swimming pool, that kind of... Yeah, very, very nice hotel. It also has its own... if you do club level, they call it Compass Club. It also has its own sort of check-in and concierge. So you get your own little room on the ground floor where they can sort everything out.
That's nice.
Yeah. The other nice thing they do is you get what they call a hotel fast pass, every day of your stay, Disneyland Paris doesn't do Magic Band.
Right. So far, only Walt Disney World is on Magic Band. So everybody else is still pulling paper.
Pulling paper out, running from gate to ride, pulling paper, and then deciding what they do from there.
Right.
So there used to be two kinds of fast pass in Disneyland Paris. There used to be the hotel fast pass, which you get if you stay either in the Disneyland Hotel in any room or the club level in New York, Newport Bay, or Sequoia Lodge. They also used to do, which was awesome, if you stayed in the Castle Club, they gave you a VIP fast pass, which was basically a blank check. You just showed it. It was like, you just walked into any fast pass ride you wished, and, you know, step aside, peasants, I'm coming through.
I remember hearing really about that one, and I think I heard about it like right after it went away, kind of thing, because it was one of those things that very few people really talked about because there are only so many of those rooms. And it was when it went away that people learned that it existed for the first time, and they were like, wait, we missed our chance.
It was incredible. It was the cheapest way to do that kind of guided tour that you can get in Florida, which is about $600 an hour or something. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
You actually used to be able to buy it. I think it was 60 euros a day per person. But in Paris, to be honest, there's not probably that many fast pass rides for you to justify that cost. So it was kind of a nice add-on. We went, as we said, we wanted to stay in the bubble this time. Because, you know, queuing for that bus in the rain with, you know, Europe is not famous for its queuing etiquette generally, particularly compared to Florida. It's one of the things you see on the boards from sort of Americans visiting Paris is this sort of lack of cue. You do have to sort of stick your elbows out a little bit and stand your ground.
Maybe not quite so aggressive about, you know, pursuing cue preservation.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit of a free-for-all sometimes. It's getting much better. Yeah, but we were really happy with the Newport bait. The rims were really well themed. It sort of had sort of Steamboat Willie kind of wallpaper all around, because it was obviously Mickey and nautical, which was an easy jump to make. Nice big rooms, really comfortable beds, and you know, really really good choice. I would recommend it. It's on the back. It's probably the third sort of hotel back away from the parks. So you sort of walk through, you walk past Hotel New York, and then you're basically in Disney Village, and then you're at the entrance to the park. So that was kind of sort of getting there and hotels really. But we're looking forward to next Thursday, because like I said, we got an incredible deal on Disneyland Hotel. And that'll be sort of amazing, just to hopefully, you know, look out of your bedroom and you can see the park.
Right.
Will be incredible, I think.
Yeah.
So
for this day, you were at Compass Club there at Newport Beach. And it sounds like, you know, you kind of had a sound plan going in, is why you chose that and all of those things. So just kind of, you know, from a review perspective, having stayed, you know, just off property, having stayed at Newport and, you know, taken it up a level, right? Done the club level. Do you feel like that was a worthwhile upgrade? And, I mean, I get the impression it probably does, because you're taking another step up for the next one, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the two things that stood out for us with the Compass Club were the Fast Pass made it easier to plan your day, because you're kind of we're obviously kind of spoiled in with Walt Disney World in Florida that you can have three passes on your band at any one time, whereas in Paris you can only have one on your card. So you scan your card like the old way, you scan your card, pull out your pass, but you can only ever have one at any time. If you've got two, that sort of kind of plots your day out for you. And you can be a bit more laid back around it. So A, that's worth it. B, being in the bubble is completely worth it. And you know, when you get in and it's stupid small things, like you get in, you turn on the TV and there's Timon and Pumbaa telling you about safety and security or whatever it is that I always seem to see every time I step into a Disney. What is it with that channel? They're obsessed with it. And it was like, really, in France? What, you know, it just seemed really strange. But it's a much preferable way of doing it. You can save a galactic amount of money, and that is where Disneyland Paris falls over a little bit, that people will go to Paris from the UK, buy an annual pass, and then stay off site. So if they're very frugal around their dinner plans, Disney are not making a whole load of money out of those people at all after the first visit.
Because those first 4 days is where they're going to make their money, and then it's pretty much free attendance.
Yeah, it's free attendance and the markup on the food, which, you know, we can all debate is horrendous. But for a 4 day stay, if they're making $100 out of you on the dinner, if you're having a big breakfast, which is included in your price right now, you know, they're not making enough money to keep turning it over, which is the worry for us generally, and always has been in Paris.
Right, sure. Well, and especially, this was the next question, and maybe this will help lead us into the parks, and that is that the last time we talked to somebody about a Disneyland Paris trip, one of the things that they remarked upon was that it looked like there was a lot happening at the studio side in terms of, you know, things getting opened up and some expansions happening. Ratatouille had just opened and Remy's. But that it seemed that a bunch of things on the Disneyland side were closed for extended refurbishments, ostensibly gearing all of this up. You know, we're still about 6 months out from Disneyland Paris's big 25th anniversary celebration, which is coming in March 2017.
Yep. That's a fair comment apart from the first bit. I would say, you know, we've been before we bought the AP, and Disneyland Park is under massive refurbishment, you know, almost to the level of Hollywood Studios right now, in Florida. That significant parts of the park are not shut, but feel awfully sparse. We'll talk about Hollywood Studios in a minute, and I'll park it because it is a tale of two parks, I think, Disneyland Paris. Disneyland Paris is starting just to come out of that. So Big Thunder Mountain Railroad opens in about 3-4 weeks.
Okay, so it still wasn't open when you were there?
Nope.
And that's been a long refurbishment.
Oh, man, that's been 14 months, something like that.
Yeah.
They're filling the river now, so they must be done. Otherwise, you know, there's going to be some wet contractors.
Right. Because if you remember, folks, the Disneyland Paris Big Thunder Mountain actually plunges under the river.
Yep. And is basically, apart from Phantom Manor, which is Haunted Mansion in another phrase, basically anchors all of Frontierland in Paris. Star Tours is still shut, which is obviously a big draw, and would have been a big draw at the start of December.
Oh, sure. With a new film.
When there you go. See, I am learning. I'm getting into it. This is helping me. This is cathartic. I'm getting into Star Wars. What else was shut? Alice's Labyrinth was shut, which is a very soft, but a really, really nice thing to do. You sort of wander around a maze. That was down. And there are a couple of others. I can't remember. So Disneyland Paris was traditionally not very well maintained, because Disneyland Paris has been running out of money since the day it opened. It really struggled, obviously, when it opened, and it was Euro Disney.
Right.
It's starting to get much more on an even keel, and more people are sort of buying into it. But again, you know, I'll come back at the end as a review of where they don't take the chance to charge you money. And that seems a fairly simple thing to fix. The interesting thing, I think, about Disneyland Park is that although you imagine Walt Disney World to be much bigger, the Magic Kingdom is actually bigger than our Disneyland Park is bigger than Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
It's in terms of acreage, it's about 20% bigger. I think Magic Kingdom just over 100 and Disneyland Park is about 130 acres. However, it has less attractions. It has about 5-6 less attractions, so it feels more sparse. And when they're shut, it really does create sort of dead zones. So if you take Frontierland, in Frontierland, there are basically, you know, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, Phantom Manor, the shooting gallery, and a few meet and greets. If one of them's shut, it's an awfully big space to fill with Phantom Manor, which is an internal ride anyway. So what used to be nice about Frontierland was that Frontierland in Paris is built around Thunder Mesa, which is, you know, this fictional Western town. And Phantom Manor linked into that. The whole premise, the backstory behind Phantom Manor was that the family's daughter married out of, you know, her class, and the wedding never happened. And
this is one
whole
of those things I think that people from the U.S. miss about Frontierland, because Paris really set the bar in terms of a comprehensive theme for Frontierland that we just don't have.
Yeah, Yeah, it was a complete story of, okay, there's the steamship that they own, there's the railroad that they built. She was going to get married, she didn't, and you go to see the haunted house where they used to live, which is a fantastic idea. Which brings me on to, so there's generally a few myths, I think, about Disneyland Paris, that everything is in French, which is not true. But some of the rides lose their impact if they are in French, and Phantom Manor is one of those. So you have to almost dig out that backstory, and because I'm into it, obviously being here, you know that, and it makes the ride that much more enjoyable. And again, that would be a very simple thing for Disneyland Paris to fix by just having a language selector, because obviously in Haunted Mansion or Phantom Manor, you're generally in a, you know, the speakers are within the ride, they're in the car with you. Uh-huh. So, you know, just make multi-tracks and switch it over. That's a really simple fix.
Right.
But they don't do it. And there is a very strange, I think when they were building or getting the funding, more importantly, and all the agreements for Disneyland Paris, there were a few sort of Francophile stipulations that were attached to the contract, that right, certain portion of the park has to be in the native tongue, which is fair enough. But it does cut back a bit. But going back to it, yeah. So it is under major refurbishment. There's no pretending. And if any guys were sort of coming to me and saying, look, we're only ever going to do Disneyland Paris once, as some of the guys from UK would do Florida, I would say definitely leave it till after the 25th kicks off and right, everything is open, because it's an incredible park. I think it is, you know, I love them both. I think Paris is a prettier park than Magic Kingdom. It really is beautiful, and it's so nice to see it start to be maintained properly again, because everything is popping.
Right.
So, you know, you just walking around the grounds, it's generally cleaner. They've got rid of the graffiti. They're starting to repair they've repaired the walkways again, where they were sort of letting them go a bit, where they always seem to be sort of cutting back on those little things that you would sort of walk it. And because it's not our home park, because it's in France, but it's our closest park.
Right.
So we have probably as much of emotional attachment to Paris, if not more than Florida. And you say, and what we found ourselves doing sometimes was going around looking at stuff and saying, that would never happen in Florida, or that would certainly never happen in California, and feeling a little bit shortchanged.
Right. I can understand that.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a fair comment from the previous guy, that it wasn't maintained. I would say Hollywood Studios is, you know, we'll come on to it in a bit.
Sort of an analog at the moment.
Oh my God. Let's keep going with the positive. So,
let's talk then about, it sounds to me like, with the exception of a couple of big construction projects still underway, that things are starting to round out a little bit. I mean, we're getting close to that anniversary celebration. And really, maybe it makes more sense to start on the studios side, because if I'm remembering correctly, you know, it's obviously a smaller park, but on the studios side, most of the work is done, right? It had a lot to get done, and they went out and kind of got it done first.
Kind of, yeah. I'm going to sound really bad. To put it in a sort of Christmas context, is like the Cousin Eddie from of all Disney property. It's pretty ugly. It hasn't got any money, but its heart's kind of in the right place. That's really stretching the analogy. Although it's the smallest park now, ever since I think California Hollywood added Cars Land to the back. It's now the smallest park in the entire property, but even then it's massively overspaced. there's just not enough attractions in there to keep you in it. If you don't like coasters, just do not turn left. There's no point. Right. So as you come through sort of production courtyard, it's pretty dire down there. You've got Rock and Roller, Aerosmith, Rock and Roller, mm-hmm. and you've got Tower of Terror. You've got the effects. I'm thinking on my head now. You've got the effects of Armageddon, which is obviously highly current and relevant.
Because everybody loves a Bruce Willis action film. Come on.
Who doesn't? Yeah. Well, you could have redone Tower of Terror with Die Hard. That would probably have been a better option. And there is a sort of stunt show, which is not bad, but is, you know, let's leave it here. It's not bad.
Right, it's a stunt show.
It's a stunt show, yeah. If you sort of hang right, it gets a lot better. So there's Toy Story Land, which has Crush's Coaster, which is really good, which is a unique ride to Paris. And that's kind of another thing that not sticks in my craw, but I tend to sort of get people, and a lot of people from the UK complain around Disneyland Paris that it's not a carbon copy of the States. And I kind of quite like that it isn't. I think there should be stuff in the other parks that should be individual to them. Otherwise, what's the point in going to the different parks? You might as well pick the one with the best weather or whichever one fits your budget, and that's it. It doesn't really give you an incentive to move around them. But Crush's Coaster is excellent. It sort of spins you around sort of mid-ride, so the cars flip, which is kind of unusual. In terms of and sort of thrill level, it's probably around the same as probably Seven Dwarfs, to put it in a sort of Floridian context.
Right, right. So it's not a high thrill attraction.
Yeah.
It's kid-friendly, but it seems to me to be maybe a little bit longer than Seven Dwarfs.
It is. And, I mean, obviously, Seven Dwarfs is brand spanking new. It's, you know, almost still got the price tag hanging off, so the electronics are much better. But it's a nice ride. It's kind of if they'd have merged Under the Sea with Little Mermaid with the sort of video screens with Seven Dwarfs is probably the best way I can describe it, if that makes sense. But obviously with Finding Nemo characters. So, you know, Bruce is there and everybody, and it's a good ride, and particularly the flips. I mean, there is danger. It's probably not great for real young kids, but sort of George's age, they're just starting to get in. So if your kids can handle Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, they would be thrilled by Crush's Coaster, probably a little bit further on, okay, but not enough to frighten them away forever.
Right, right. So it's sort of that half step next from Seven
exactly,
Dwarfs.
Before you go to, you know, Space Mountain and
Okay. So that clearly is a highlight on the studio side. The other
Plaster Remy is lovely. It's a really nice area, and is what I think Hollywood Studios Paris should be. Obviously, it's new, so it's great. But Ratatouille is a fantastic ride. It really is good, and is almost worth the journey. Just I think
itself,
all by itself, there are two things that are worth the journey all by themselves. One is Discoveryland, which we'll talk about in a sec, if that's okay, and Plaster Remy. So Ratatouille is a trackless ride. So you're sort of skiing around in this little mouse car. It's a 3D sort of screen show, but the concept is basically that you're Remy and you're being chased through the restaurant. So there's a bit of 4D in there. I'm not going to spoil the ride, but it's thrilling and it's exciting and it's new. And generally, we're so appreciative in Disneyland Paris that anything that's new that isn't basically a knockoff of what someone else has got, we go mad for it. But it is an excellent ride. Next to that is also Bistro de Remy, which is one of the restaurants.
Right.
which is very, very good. Again, I would say it was almost a don't miss if you were visiting Disneyland Paris. It's a themed restaurant. It's not part of the ride like Blue Bayou was in Pirates of the Caribbean, but you can see the ride from the restaurant, if you see what I mean. It's behind a glass screen.
Okay.
The premise of it is at the end of Ratatouille, he opens his own restaurant, doesn't he, Remy the Rat, in that sort of little
just a bunch.
And that's the basis of the restaurant, that you're shrunk down to the size of a rat. So all the decor is lovely. So the backs of your seats are basically side plates.
Okay.
Your chairs, if you're on a sort of freestanding table rather than a booth, are the tops of beer bottles. All the lighting is effectively, you know, shaped like fairy lights. So it's a really nicely detailed restaurant.
Sure.
And is very authentic. And is very, very good food as well.
Nice.
You know, they tend to love a set menu in Disneyland Paris, I must admit. There's not a ton of a la carte. Well, there is, but it's just prohibitively expensive. They sort of steer you down the set menu.
Right.
But it is very good. They also do a really nice wine flight with it. So I think the premium menu with the wine flight is around between 70 and 80 euros.
Okay.
And it's three, four glasses of wine. One of them is a champagne. And you know, we get discount on that from the annual pass as well. Okay. So
that's expensive, but it's not out of line. I mean, that's probably about what a signature dining restaurant would be at Walt Disney World.
Exactly. Yeah, you'd expect to pay that in most of the, you know, if you stayed in the Grand Clara, if you went to the California Grill or anywhere like that in, you know, or La Cellier, you'd probably be paying more. Really good, really good. Really nice experience. So thoroughly recommend that. Then just turn around and head back out of Disney Hollywood Studios, because there is nothing. Right.
So we'll shift our attention back over to the Disneyland park, the Magic Kingdom park.
Yeah. So Disneyland park is, you know, very, you know, you would absolutely recognize it if you'd ever been to Disney World. With a few different sort of takes on it. I think, as I said, I think the Paris park is prettier than the Magic Kingdom. Up until the hub reform, it was probably a little bit better laid out as well.
Okay. Not a fan of the hub rebuild, huh?
No. Before, I'm saying, you know, since obviously Magic Kingdom Harbor rebuild has kind of made traffic easier in Florida.
Okay.
But in Paris, what they did, which was quite a nice idea, probably because of the rain as well, down the backs of the stores, there's a sort of Art Deco sort of arcades that you can walk through. That are on the cover.
Okay. So they're starting to do some of this in Florida, from what I've heard. Now, I don't know that they'll actually go as far as to cover them, but they have gone back, and that pathway that they opened behind one side of the store on Main Street at least now has some decor up, so you're not looking at, you know, the backs of stores.
So it makes navigation through the park much easier, particularly around parade time. Or as people are starting to congregate at the end of the night for the fireworks. One of the other things I'd say generally around Disneyland Paris is we are seeing what you're probably going to start to see in a year's time in regards to security. That it is kind of like getting into an airport. So even when you walk into the front of a hotel from coming outside of the Disney bubble, if you like, you're wanded, you know, with the sort of metal detector with a security guard, and your bags are scanned. Once you go, so then you're in, but when you leave your hotel sort of the back way, i.e. not through the sort of public entrance, and you're sort of still in the park piece,
right.
You're again, you walk through you know, a full airport, you know, the metal detector gates, and your bags go through x-ray. So
that's the big new piece is doing the actual x-ray for bags.
Yeah. So it pretty much hits you as you come out of Sheshi Station, if you're coming off the train or off the buses from the off property. They have ones as you're coming out of the as you're coming through from the hotels that are just outside Disney Village. I don't think they have them for Disneyland Hotel, because obviously you're basically over the park and you've been in and you've been checked anyway. But it, you know, you start to feel that, you know, with the trouble they've had in Orlando, obviously Paris has had terrible trouble over the last year, and that's why it's stepped up so high. But with, you know, the stories of guns in parks and stuff like that, you kind of think, are they testing it? Because I know they're doing a similar sort of thing at Universal in Florida. And is it just going to end up in Florida? It'd be tough to do in Florida, but just because of the sheer amount of people. But yeah, we're seeing that much more, that security is a much bigger presence in the park than you would ever notice anywhere else.
Right.
Which is, you know, everyone's got to do it. You feel completely safe within the parks because you know everyone's basically been scanned. But on to the slightly better stuff. So, yeah, love my Florida, love my Paris. I think Discovery – so the one section or the one land that's quite a lot better than Florida, I think, is Discovery Land. Versus Tomorrowland, if you were sort of taking a straight shoot out in the Magic Kingdom stuff. The architecture is lovely. It's that whole steampunk Jules Verne theme, rather than the futuristic sort of city of the future.
Right. Instead, we get the steampunk quasi future that never was.
That never was, but you kind of. Whereas I think, and it might be just me, when you look at Tomorrowland now, it looks quite dated from a sort of 50s futuristic, this will be the city of the future kind of thing.
Right, right. It's definitely a mid-century take on the future will look like, as opposed to the steampunk, which is at least a more, fresher concept. Reboot of.
I think it's more of a concept and holds together a bit better and holds its longevity, whereas although I love Tomorrowland and I love my TTA and all that sort of stuff, it is looking a little bit dated. The other plus in Discoveryland versus Tomorrowland is Space Mountain. It's a much harder ride in Paris than it is in Florida. It will probably feel more at home in Six Flags than it, and most of the other Disney thrill rides. I think you get two inversions pretty much straight in a row, and there's a reverse corkscrew in it. And it's much faster, and it's themed really well. So the Space Mountain in Paris is, you're basically loaded into a gun. That you're fired up through, and it's a lovely thrill ride.
Yeah, it uses the same launch technology that's used in Rock and Roller Coaster, California Screamin'. It's that induction, you know, just power launch.
Yeah, 0-60, kind of like Test Track.
Yeah.
There is a rumor. And I don't know, it's going to get the Star Wars overlay for Hyperspace Mountain because Paris are doing Season of the Force from.
Yeah, it's actually January. Now I can tell you it's not just a rumor.
Okay.
I am looking at the publicity that just came out on, this just came out, well, I guess it came out a month ago, came out October 17th.
Okay.
Announcing the Disneyland Paris 25th anniversary. And they did explicitly say, now here's the little part that's kind of maybe left it slightly mysterious, is that the paragraph says, guests will also be able to join the Rebel Alliance by becoming the drivers of Star Wars Hyperspace Mountain, Disneyland Park. The Force will be strong with this attraction, which hurtles through the Star Wars galaxy, following the twists and turns of TIE fighters and an intimidating Star Destroyer. So it does sound like that's what's happening. But they don't actually come out explicitly and say that it's replacing Space Mountain.
All right. I'm not holding out much hope, I've got to admit. It feels like it's a done deal. Oh, man. I don't get it. I've got to, you know, and I know I've declared my antipathy towards Star Wars already, but I can't see how it's going to feel a little bit like a shoehorn. On all that Jules Verne stuff to
stick a
TIE fighter on top.
Star Wars is around there, isn't it? Or is it?
It's around the back, so it feels kind of slightly separate.
Okay.
And the whole steampunk thing is generally around the center of Discoveryland. So you've got Orbitron, because Space Ranger Spin is there, but it's such a central piece of the part of that land to stick a TIE fighter, an X-Wing or whatever on the top of it is going to feel a little bit weird. And plus, because it is a little bit faster and it's a little bit harder, there's not a lot of pause in Space Mountain on the ride. There's the bit where you sort of do that sort of floating motion piece as you've done the first sort of major dip and through.
Okay.
And I don't know how you're going to read it in terms of you. I don't know how you're going to notice it, because it's a pretty quick ride. It's what, 2:20, something like that, 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
Well,
good. It's, you know, a high with speed two ride, flips, so...
yeah, and you know, with two flips, you're looking at your feet for a portion of it. so it just feels a little bit. I don't know. Not everything has to be about Star Wars. And, you know, maybe I'm too much of a traditionalist on this one. I know they changed from the original Space Mountain, which was awesome, the Space Mountain Mission 1, and they went to Mission 2, which was really good. And there's some really nice sort of neon effects in it. But to try and sort of show on Space Star Wars is... I just think it's... Just get... Use all that money and open Star Tours quicker would be a better spend, I would argue, because that's been shut for about a year as well. But... Apparently, yeah, with Star Tours, I think we're getting the 3D version.
Right, and March 26th is the official date.
Yeah, looking at the outside of... I was just noticing on the papers, I should have done more research and read my releases like you did. but looking at the posters, it seems like there's going to be planets and therefore stories that were definitely from... Not Rogue One, but the one before.
Right, Episode 8. Yeah, there will
episode
be...
Episode 8, the, yeah.
We just got that announcement at Destination D that for Walt Disney World and Disneyland as well, that, you know, they're going to be able to use this sort of episodic 3D technology that they built into the attraction, yeah, to include at least one, and it may be more than one, Episode 8 scene.
Yeah. So... Yeah, that's kind of Discoveryland, which is a massive draw for Disneyland Paris. I think it's a lovely part of the park.
Well, so let's talk big picture Disneyland Park, and clearly Discoveryland is a big favorite of yours. What are maybe one or two other Disneyland Park elements from this particular trip that stood out, and maybe in particular focus on things that were connected to being there for Halloween?
Yeah, I mean the Halloween overlay was amazing. So as you walk up Main Street, and that was the cool thing. So it wasn't just focused on Main Street. The Main Street stuff was lovely. So there, I think I threw up a couple of pictures on Facebook as well. They're in the central, just in front of the town square where all the plants are. They'd sort of done these pumpkins in in the shape of Goofy, Mickey, Donald, sort of the big five, which was a really nice touch. There was a soundtrack playing on the upper floors of Main Street, sort of ghost noises and sort of generally spooky noises. The stuff they did really well, again, I know I banged on about it on the last one, was the character stuff. So obviously the traditional places where you would see Peter Pan, Aladdin, and princesses have been replaced with villains, which is a really cool thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably the best one around Phantom Manor was Jack Skellington. And it was just one of those lovely times when, and hopefully we're going to have more of them, when your kids are really into the film and the character is there at the same time. So you're just in that sort of sweet spot of them buying into it. So we'd sort of teed them up and bought Nightmare Before Christmas on, you know, and they loved it as a film. And then to meet Jack and the cues for the characters generally weren't that bad. They're about 20 minutes. And Jack Skellington spent ages with everybody. And obviously he's a talking character. And it was just a really, really well done piece. Like I said, it used to be a bit of a scramble for character meets in Paris, but it's now much more regulated and there's ropes and there's lines and everyone kind of gets it. They were handing out, so after the character meets, they were handing out sort of bags of Haribo and bags of candy generally. So there was a little bit of trick or treating going on.
Okay, but they kind of built it in with the character meets instead of having it be a separate activity.
There you go. So you'd meet the character and then, you know, the CM that was there, you'd do the photo pass thing and then the CM would give the kids some candy. So it was awesome. In Frontierland, well, there were two really good character meets in Frontierland. Mickey and Minnie were out there in their Halloween costume. Again, really nice timing because Arabella had her mini dress on that was the Halloween one that we bought in Florida the year before. But in the summer, so there was a great interaction there between Arabella and Minnie and it was really, really good. The other one that was a real highlight was behind the castle. They do the whole Maleficent Crown of Thorns, where Maleficent does a character meet and greet as well. And she was excellent and that wasn't the kids, that was Kath. She was right up the front for that one. Getting her photo taken with Maleficent, which was excellent. Highlights, another Peter Pan, and it's nice to see, and it was kind of going back to the earlier point, that once they have refurbed rides, they look so much different, and it's so much better. So... They just reopened Peter Pan's Flight, which a couple of years ago was dire. It was, you know, lights were gone, the animatronics weren't worth it, and it was just like, oh, why did we come here? But now they've redone it. It's not quite because I was watching the Shanghai one on YouTube, which looks incredible. It's not quite at that level, but. Everything's really popping. It's full of color. All the lights are working. All the characters are working. They all look really fresh. You know, there's no chips and scuffs on the cars. And also, it's a small world. It's just been refurbed as well. So again, you know, I think I put on Facebook that I had to do that about five times in 2 days because it's really captured the youngest ones. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would have rather stuck forks in my leg, to be honest. But it was at least you were going around a ride that was new and looked vaguely pretty, rather than she was engaging with one that was just about to fall over.
Yeah, yeah. At least it didn't look tired and worn out.
Exactly. They've also refurbed Adventure Isle, which is in Adventureland, which is a really nice sort of. it's not an attraction per se. It's more of a sort of wander around, a bit like the dinosaurs playground. So it's kind of Game of Thronesy. It's behind the galleon ship. So there's a great big galleon ship where Captain Hook does his meet and greet, which is really good.
Okay. So they do the meet and greet on what is roughly the equivalent of you know, in Disneyland, yeah, they use the sailing ship Columbia, the same kind of idea.
Columbia. Yeah, exactly. But proper, full-on Pirates of the Caribbean galleon ship behind him. So we had a great interaction with him. And what I'm trying to teach George is to reference the film back to the characters and you'll get more out of them. So George was starting to talk about the crocodile in the lake. And Captain Hook sort of reacted to that and sort of ran behind the photographer and pretended to be really scared. And it was just a really nice way of doing it. But Adventure Isle is built right behind the Pirate Galleon. And it's sort of like there's David Jones' locker down there and the lighting's lovely and, you know, all sort of pirate skeletons. So it's just nice this year to see things start to come online. And, you know, once Star Tours, Big Thunder Mountain, all of that stuff comes on, I think, yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean is being done up from January. Because you can see them, because George, whereas Arabella was obsessed with It's a Small World, George was obsessed with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay.
And, you know, we've seen the one in Florida, seen the one in Cali. So you could see where they are making room for Jack Sparrow and Barbarossa to come in. So, okay. So it's, we're going to get the full-on version, it looks like. So that'll be awesome. Interesting one about the Pirates of the Caribbean. It's still got the – I haven't been in it. We're going to try and do it this next week. The Blue Lagoon, which effectively would have been the Blue Bayou in Pirates of the Caribbean, is there. So that looked pretty good. We picked restaurants really well this year. We were much better than we have been previously. A good one we did was Waltz, which is on Main Street.
Okay.
So you're sort of sitting at the window overlooking Main Street. Really good meal. There was sort of, again, sort of similar price to a signature restaurant, sort of 60. Maybe 60 euros, but the best thing was it wasn't Cronenberg they were serving as a beer. They have this real issue in Disneyland Paris that they only seem to be able to serve Cronenberg, and
right,
I'm not
the whole local beer thing, and
I don't even think I think it's owned by InBev or someone like that. But in there they had Anchor Steam, so that was a welcome change from the. I don't drink. I end up drinking wine in Paris because it's much.
Can't hardly blame you.
No, it's me. Yeah, but really good food. Caff had a lobster bisque and a fillet, and I had the cheeseburger, but they served it with a chili. And as they sort of brought the meal to the table, they were saying that's how Walt Disney is cheeseburgers, and I never knew that. Yeah, I never knew that. Yeah, so I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, because I'm from the East End of London, so I'm naturally skeptical that someone's trying to con me up an extra $5 with an extra story. But no, apparently it's true. He had cheeseburgers with chili all the time. You know, some really nice memorabilia in there, sort of old photos, sort of some original sales. So nice to just sort of sit around. So I'd recommend that one. I mean, Dreams, I would say, is so as they're getting older now, and particularly on this trip that's coming up next week where the park hours are that much shorter, we managed to keep them up for, because they weren't suffering on that jet lag, they were doing the whole park open to park close piece. And that's also another reason why we were much happier to stay in a Disney hotel this time, because it was that much easier to get home.
Sure.
And Dreams is lovely. It's definitely one of, if not the best nighttime show that Disney do. And if you haven't seen it, check it out on YouTube. It is incredible. It just really hangs together really well. you do get that feeling of that show has been written for that park, because there's a lot of French characters in there. Uh-huh. And one thing they do very well, Disneyland Paris, and it goes back to the sort of earlier myths that everyone is in French. It's not, but a fair few attractions are dual language. So one of the characters, there will generally be two characters, and one of them will speak English and one of them will speak French, and they both sort of cover the main plot points by the conversation.
Okay. And you can kind of, even if they don't say exactly the same thing, you can fill in the blanks based on the context.
And you can, you can follow along. It uses the fountains around the castle as well for the projection piece, similar to sort of River of Light kind of idea. This one worked.
or if nothing else, is at least running.
And is running and isn't, you know, a year late, or I don't think we're ever going to say. And there's sort of Hunchback is in there, and Belle, and I think Peter Pan is the overall link. And they're very, very, it's very Peter Pan heavy, Disneyland Paris. And Lumiere are the sort of two main characters from Beauty and the Beast. And it's just incredible. And, you know, check it out on YouTube. It's a lovely show. It really hangs together well. And even though it was, you know, it's Saturday night in October, the end of October, the weather was really good. So we were basically standing there in T-shirts. Just we'd had a lovely meal and walked, you know, come down. The kids were still wide awake. And we just sat on, you know, stood on Main Street. And watched Dreams, and it was incredible. We went back again the next night, so it was lovely. So that was a real highlight. The other one, although I've basically sat here and slated Disney Hollywood Studios for half an hour, the new Mickey and the Magician show that took over from, I think it was Animagique, in one of the theaters in Hollywood Studios is excellent. It's kind of an amalgamation of all of the Disney musicals, that, you know, the shows that have been taken from films, so Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and those, and sort of Mickey is the link, and is really well done. It's about 25 minutes, half an hour. We were reasonably late to the party, so we were one of the last few in. So we were kind of high up, but didn't impact on the view. There's a bit of audience interaction towards the lower seats. So if you do want that, I'd say go for not the very first sort of section. The front of the second section seemed to be where the characters were interacting most with the audience.
Okay.
And was really good, really professional. I think it's just won an award actually from the theme park.
Yeah, I don't know for sure whether it just won an award, but I did just see some things written about it very positively. So, it's definitely being well reviewed.
It's definitely worth checking out. But, yeah, I mean, seeing Disney do Halloween was really good, and it just made us more keen to go back and book for Christmas. So I think we did it. We got back on the Sunday, and I'd done the deal with the woman on the phone by the Monday afternoon for next week.
Okay.
So I'd say, you know, so rounding up, it's definitely worth visiting. I'd say if you're coming over, give it 6 to 8 months and everything will be finished. I mean, when you look at the original plans for Disneyland Paris and definitely Hollywood Studios, it makes you cry because, you know, Splash Mountain was supposed to be there. Soarin' was supposed to be there. But they just run out of money, and which comes back to the point I was making. They that sort of lack of commercialism really needs to be addressed in Paris.
Yeah, see, it's so, kind of an irony, right? Because, you know, we hear the folks over here on our side complaining about how, you know, everything ends in a gift shop and all these value-add things that they're offering at ridiculously high prices, you know, makes it feel all stratified. And then, you know, we turn the page and look across to the ocean at Disneyland Paris, and what you're telling me is, well, gee, I'd kind of like to see those options here because it would mean that perhaps we'd actually be able to have our space or our Splash Mountain.
Yeah. And you know, we're all businessmen. That's what pays for stuff. Charging people money to do stuff pays for the other stuff. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? And there's just a few key callouts, you know, booking restaurants. There's no website booking. You have to ring and there's no sort of, so are people shying away from the restaurants? Because I'd say the flip side of that is that it is not the craziness that is Florida that you're booking. You're trying to get Le Cellier 6 months out and there's no tables.
But then you got to ask the question, right? You can always get a reservation, but does that mean that you're also always going to have slightly shabby restaurants because there's no money to keep up with refurbishments? I mean,
exactly. So, you know, you can generally get, the rule of thumb is if you book 2 weeks, apart from inventions in the Disneyland Hotel for Sunday brunch, which is incredibly popular, which is a character brunch, you can, 2 weeks out, you can pretty much pick your table, which is not great when you're running, what, 30 restaurants? And it's just strange stuff that you would just take for granted. So, you know, you can buy a photo pass. It's probably the best castle that Disney have produced apart from Shanghai. Guess where there's no photo pass photographers? Up on Main Street. I mean, you walk up Florida and there's like 20.
Right.
There must be, what, one every 10 yards on Main Street in Florida? Yeah, there's not one.
Odd.
Yeah. The Halloween party. So the Halloween party is Halloween night and that's it. Whereas if they'd done it on the Saturday before, they would have picked up all the English crowd because they would have still been there due to half term and probably the week before. And looking, because we were there on the Sunday and obviously they were setting up for the Monday. And there was so much going on, you would have probably paid twice. So the tickets weren't expensive. They were like 35 euros. Whereas I think in Florida, they're what, 90? The closer you get to Halloween. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And so to do it, and you know, that's not mega million investment. That's not building a brand new ride with a completely immersive experience. That's just buying OPEX in to run the park and get the floats
right,
out again.
Right.
And you're going to make money on it. So if you think you did that three times, that apparently there were 30,000 people there on Halloween night. You times that by 30, that's £1 million a night.
Yeah.
Or take. If they'd have done that over three nights, that's £3 million that they could have spent on something else. So there's my resume for running Disney. Yeah, we could have done it if I ran Disneyland Paris.
That's right, Dan Hall's solo version of If I Ran Disneyland Paris.
I could have given you six episodes with a theme tune and a logo.
Careful, we may revisit this.
it's a great place to visit. The myths about it being, you know, dirty and everyone smoking, those days have sort of gone. The cast members are much better around that. I think where it's a bit like the sort of New York analogy from sort of 15, 20 years ago, that once they started to improve the environment, the crime rate dropped. You know, there was an argument for that. So if the park is cleaner, people are generally respecting the park more and the cast members are more inclined to enforce that because it stands out more.
Right. And it's not so relentless and exhausting if it's not being abused.
Keep up with it. Yeah. You can keep up with it and you can manage it.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, obviously I guess from an American view, you would tend to use it as a stop off because I know you guys sort of like to do 10, 15 countries in two, three weeks.
You raise a good point. And when it comes to Americans visiting, I think that there are really, you know, a couple of different ways you can do it. I mean, either you do it as, you're right, as the end, you know, one end or another of a Europe, you know, kind of tour, doing lots of different areas. Or you go and make it sort of the center of a, you know, London, Paris kind of trip, basically.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. And sort of, obviously I sort of try and help people out on some of the boards on questions and stuff. And that is very much the two, you know, we will be in Paris for 3 days. Is it worth coming out to Paris, Disneyland Paris for a day or whatever? And there is absolutely plenty to do in a day. And if you're doing that London to Paris thing, it's, you know, Paris is the act, you know, the center of Paris is 30 odd miles away from Disneyland Paris. So right. you can definitely keep them as a separate thing. But yeah, it was a really good trip and sort of made us, you know, even more excited to go for Christmas.
All right. Well, it sounds great. And looking forward to hearing back again after the Christmas trip. And I guess the one kind of wrap-up question I'll ask is, and we always do this, and I think it's an interesting question when you're in the midst of trying to do sort of, you know, Disneyland Paris of all the seasons for the year. So when you look back 5 years down the road to, you know, that fall trip to Disneyland Paris, that first year you had annual passes, what's the enduring image? What's that one memory that's really going to stick with you going to be of that trip?
It's going to probably be walking in the first time and seeing Disneyland as a Halloween dress. And just walking in and being totally overawed by, you know, we know the park quite well, but just seeing it completely transformed and a whole new take on it. And I think that will be the start of many visits for Halloween. I think that'll be a regular one.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming and talking about your trip, Dan. And
always a pleasure.
We'll look forward to the next chapter with the Christmas trip down the road.
Okay, mate. Thank you very much.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes. What delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.